Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Deuteronomy chapter 2, last part of the chapter, verses 26 through 37. The text I will summarize by calling it the defeat of King Sihon. Our context is this: in the first part of Deuteronomy 2, verses 1 through 25, Moses is given a speech to the people of Israel on the plains of Moab, and he is recapping the 38 plus years that the Israelites wandered around in the wilderness. So we'll start now with verses 26 through 29 of Deuteronomy 2. This is Moses speaking, and he's speaking about what he did in the past. This has already happened at the time he's given his speech. So I, Moses, sent messengers from the wilderness of Kedemoth to Sihon, king of Heshbon, with words of peace, saying, "Let me pass through your land. I will travel only on the highway. I will not turn aside to the right or to the left. You will sell me food for money so that I may eat, and give me water for money so that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot, just as the sons of Esau who live in Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for me, until I cross over the Jordan into the land which the Lord our God is giving to us." Now we have some geographical mentions here, so let's take first Kedemoth. I sent messages from the wilderness of Kedemoth, so this is where they are. They just crossed the brook Zered at the south of Moab proper. They've gone up to the Arnon River, and that is the what I will call Moab proper, because that's the area that Moab always took. If you get north of the Arnon River to the all the way to the northern tip of the Dead Sea, that area was fought over. Sometimes the Ammonites claimed it, sometimes the Moabites claimed it, sometimes the Israelites claimed it, and now Sihon, who's now king in Heshbon, he's claiming it. So that land was more contested. Well, the Israelites are now at Kedemoth. If you look at the Arnon River, its sources there in the steep mountain valley. If you go east of the sources of the Arnon, just for, 10 or 20 miles, I can't tell exactly, but going east toward the desert, you come to a place called Kedemoth. Now, this is a good bit east of the King's Highway, which I'm sure the Israelites had come up on, and now they're way out there in the east, and that's from there Moses sent messengers to Sihon, who's king of Heshbon. Now, remember, Sihon has conquered Moab now. He's an Amorite. Amorite is one of the prominent ancient Near Eastern tribes, not just a Canaanite tribe, but they were found in Syria and Mesopotamian Valley, as well as Canaan. So if you look at Kedemoth and you go northwest on about a 35-degree angle, you get right to the tip of the northern tip of the Dead Sea. There's Heshbon on the King's Highway. So that's where Sihon is, and that's where Sihon is in Heshbon, and Israel is in Kedemoth to the southeast of Heshbon. Kedemoth means eastern regions, and that's because they're to the east of the Arnon River, I'm sure. So the message said, "I want to pass through the land. I only want to travel on the highway." That's the King's Highway, which runs through Heshbon. "Just let me pass through on that highway and don't attack us, and we won't attack you." Because the highway is to the east of the hilly, fertile section of the land there in the Transjordan area where the subjects of Sihon were living. And Moses is saying, "Look, just let us go by. We won't attack you. We need to take a left here. We need to go east so we can cross the Jordan Valley," which is what we want to do. And as you look at the map, you'll see that Heshbon is entirely blocking their way. Now, Moses in verse 29 says, "Just as the sons of Esau who live in Seir," Seir is the mountain range from on the east of the Arabah Valley, which stretches from the southern tip of the Dead Sea to the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, that mountain range that runs north to south there is Seir, and Edom owns Seir, the sons of Esau, that's Edom. You go north of Seir, when you hit the brook Zered, which is the brook that runs right into the southern tip of the Dead Sea, that's the southern border of Moab, and Ar is the capital city of Moab. They don't know exactly where Ar is. One map has it right south of the Arnon River, but wherever it is, those are the Moabites. And so what Moses is saying, Sihon, look, I got by Esau and it got by the Moabites, and what they did for me, they didn't let me pass through the land, but they did let me buy food and water. It has to be buying food and water, because if you say, "Let me pass through on foot just as the sons of Esau did and just as the Moabites did," that wouldn't be true, because the Edomites and the Moabites actually forbade the Israelites to pass through their land on foot. So the "just as" must refer to the purchase of money and water. as the Edomites and the Moabites said, go by us on the east, but don't come through our land. And of course, if the Israelites are on the highway there, they're on the king's highway, they would not be plundering the fields. And that's why Moses made what was a pretty good deal, actually. But we go to verse 30. But Sihon, king of Heshbon, was not willing for us to pass through his land, for the Lord your God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate in order to deliver him into your hand as he is today. Well, Sihon made a bad deal here, bad decision. Nah, we're not going to let you go through the land, Israel. Well, Israel said, okay, if you're not going to let us go through, we're going to have to fight you, and as we'll see, Israel did fight Sihon and dispossessed him of his kingdom. So that was a stupid move on his part. Well, I guess, I don't know, it's easy to criticize in hindsight, I guess, but he really should have let the Israelites go through and trusted them. Now, God hardened his spirit, and of course, this is the classic theological problem. How could God harden a human being's spirit? It's not their fault. Well, this is because he hardened his spirit after they were obstinate and wouldn't let the Israelites come through, and so that was judicial punishment. This is an old theological problem. It usually comes up with the hardening of the Pharaoh's heart, not the hardening of Sion's heart, but it's the same idea. There's a lot of examples of this. Let me give you one. Exodus 4:21, the Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the powers which I've put in your power, but I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. But what that was is God was hardening Pharaoh's heart as judicial punishment for being evil. Moses mentions that Sion's heart will be obstinate and God will harden his spirit in order to deliver him into your hand as he is today. Well, how is Sihon delivered into Moses' hand today? Remember, he's given a speech after the destruction of Sihon, king of Heshbon. And what he's saying is, we've got him now. This is how it happened today. So he's talking about the time of him giving the speech, not the time of when Sihon was captured, as John Gill points out. We turn now to Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 31 through 35. Moses continues with his speech. The Lord said to me, see, I have begun to deliver Sihon and his land over to you. Begin to occupy that you may possess his land. Then Sihon, with all his people, came out to meet us in battle at Jahaz. The Lord our God delivered him over to us, and we defeated him with his sons and all his people. So we captured all his cities at that time and utterly destroyed the men, women, and children of every city. We left no survivor. We took only the animals as our booty and the spoil of the cities which we had captured. Now, this battle of Jahaz occurred roughly one-third of the way up on that 35-degree northwestern diagonal from Kedemoth to Heshbon. It's still far, fairly eastward of the King's Highway, and Sog obviously brought his troops on down to Jahaz, and then Moses advanced to Jahaz, so they met sort of in the middle, closer to Israel, but they met in the middle, and they fought this big battle. Now, let's stop here. Now that Sihon has been captured, let's look at the history of Moab. First of all, the city of Jahaz, according to Gill, Moab actually got it back years later. Remember, Sihon is wiped out by the Israelites, wiped out. So Moab is now back in charge of their own land. And as far as the city of Jahaz, we can see, according to John Gill in Isaiah 15:14, that Jahaz is back in Moabite hands. This, of course, is around the early 8th century or the late 8th century B.C. That would be after 722 B.C., after the exile of the 10 northern tribes. Heshbon and Elah also cry out. Those are two cities in the northern end of Moab. Their voice is heard all the way to Jahaz. Therefore the armed men of Moab cry aloud. His soul trembles within him. So Jahaz is mentioned as part of the land of Moab there in Isaiah 15:4, so we know that the Moabites got it back. Now, how about the history of Moab in general? I've been mentioning this as we go through, but I found a great little paragraph in Holman's Bible Dictionary, which kind of gives the history of Moab pretty good, so I'm going to go over that now. Quote, since they were neighbors, the history of the Moabites was intertwined with that of Israel. Moreover, the Israelites regarded the Moabites as close relatives, as implied by Genesis 19:30-38. We hear of peaceful interchange as well as conflicts between the Israelites and Moabites already during the time of the Judges. The story of Judith illustrates The story of Ruth illustrates peaceful relations, while the episode of Ehud and Eglon illustrates conflict in Judges 3, verses 12 through 30. Saul is reported to have fought against the Moabites, 1 Samuel 14:47. David, a descendant of the Moabitess Ruth, according to the biblical genealogies, as we see in Ruth chapter 4, placed his parents under the protection of the king of Moab while he was on the run from Saul. Yet he is reported to have defeated the Moabites in battle later on and to have executed two-thirds of the Moabite prisoners by arbitrary selection in 2 Samuel 8:2. Moab was represented among Solomon's wives, as we get a little bit further on into history here, and the worship of Chemosh, the Moabite god, was accommodated in Solomon's Jerusalem. So the Moabites were around for a good while. Now, Easton's doesn't say when they were finally extinguished. I read this somewhere, that they got wiped out by the Babylonians when the Babylonians came down in that area during the destruction of Israel in 586 B.C., but that's my memory, so I'm not going to state that positively right now. But we see that Moab is around, been around a long, long time in the history of Israel. All right, at this Battle of Jahaz, the king of Sion was utterly destroyed. Not only, well, doesn't say him personally was destroyed, but it says the men, the women, and children of every city were destroyed. Because not only did they beat Jahaz, they also captured all the cities of Sion and utterly destroyed men, women, and their children. That could be Heshbon, Eleleah, Jazer, and Medeba, Beth Diblathaim. I don't know. All these cities that were owned by Sion, the Israelites wiped them out. So the way was clear for them to go up to the north, to the plains of Moab, where they were prepared to cross the Jordan River, except for the little problem with the seduction of the Midianite women who were allied with the people of Moab to seduce the Israelites. But at least militarily, they were not being stopped anymore. The Israelites also had to wipe out the Midianites, who were a tribe up there, before they could actually cross over. But their big guerrilla that they had to beat was Sion, and Sion is now wiped out. Now, it says in verse 34 that the men, women, and children of every city were destroyed. That word destroyed is interesting because it is sometimes translated devoted, which is not quite the same thing as destroyed, is it not? So let's read what the NIV Study Bible says about that word. Quote, the Hebrew for this expression usually denotes the destruction of everyone and everything that could be destroyed. Objects like gold, silver, bronze, not subject to destruction, were put in a secure place as God's possession. Destruction of people and things made them useless to the conquerors, but put them in the hands of God. So the word is sometimes translated destroyed and sometimes devoted. The practice was sometimes limited, as when God assigned captured livestock and other plunder to his people as recompense for service in his army. And for example, we'll see here in this verse itself, in verse 35, we took only the animals. So they didn't utterly destroy the animals. They kept the animals. The city was devoted to destruction, but that did not include the animals. That was to help the soldiers out for booty. Now, the thought did cross my mind here. Maybe the translation should be the men, women, and children were utterly devoted. In other words, dedicated to God, captured as slaves, and not killed. But I looked at a lot of translations, and they all say destroyed. And a lot of commentaries, they all say destroyed. So we assume that the men, women, and children were killed, especially when it says we left no survivor. That sounds like they were killed. Now, of course, that raises the question of how can a loving, merciful God kill all the men, women, and children? It's one thing for the men, but the women and children? Well, all I can say is it's a terrible thing to fall into the hands of a holy God. Those children would have grown up to be idolaters and child sacrificers. If I remember correctly, Chemosh was big on that, Molech down there in Moab. These people were utterly depraved, and they basically were justly dealt with. Now let me finish this verse up with a comment that Jameson Fawcett and Brown made as he gave a history of the possession of Heshbon, the city to the north of Moab, and the surrounding lands there. He said, first, the Zamzumans, the giants, were the aboriginals. They were a, quote, bullying, presumptuous band of giants. And then the Ammonites beat them. And then the Amorites under Og beat the Ammonites. And now the Israelites have beaten the Amorites. We go now to Deuteronomy 2, verses 36 and 37, and we'll finish up this short audio. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of Arnon, and from the city which is in the valley, even to Gilead, there was no city that was too high for us. The Lord our God delivered all over to us. Only you did not go near to the land of the sons of Ammon, all along the river Jabbok and the cities of the hill country, and wherever the Lord our God had commanded us. Now the city Aroer is, according to the BibleAtlas.org map, just to the north of the Arnon River. The text here says it's on the edge of the valley of the Arnon. It's on the northern edge. And from the city which is in the valley, that's the southern point of their conquest. What is that city that's in the valley? I'm assuming it's the city of Aroer, A-R-O-E-R. It's hard to pronounce. Aroer. It was on the edge of the valley of Arnon. Now, it could be another city, but I'm sure it's Aroer. Even to Gilead. Well, Gilead is the description of the Transjordan area to the east of the Jordan River, running from the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee to the northern tip of the Dead Sea. It's easy to remember where Gilead is, and it consists not only of the valley of the Jordan River there, on the eastern part of the Jordan River, but as you go up into the hill country there, there's that string of hills that runs down from the Sea of Galilee down to the northern tip of the Dead Sea. It's called Gilead. But of course, the part of Gilead that Moses is talking about here is to the south of the Jabbok River, which runs in running from east to west, runs into the Jordan River at somewhere just about halfway, roughly halfway up the Jordan River. Now, that Jabbok River was the land of the Ammonites, and God had told the Israelites, leave them alone. And the reason probably was because Lot was their ancestor. Leave them alone. And so when it says here they wiped out Sihon all the way from Aroer to Gilead, Gilead would be right near Heshbon, right near the northern tip of the Dead Sea. As you go west a little bit till you get to the valley, as you go west from Heshbon. In other words, they're ready to cross over. They wiped them out. They wanted to do it peacefully, but Sihon wouldn't listen to that. Now, they didn't go near to the land of the sons of Jamin, all along the river Jabbok, and the cities of the hill country. I'm assuming that's the cities of the Ammonites in these hills there in Gilead, right around the Jabbok River, because God, and wherever the Lord our God had commanded us. God actually had commanded them back in verse 19 not to go near the sons of Ammon. When you come opposite the sons of Ammon, do not harass them nor provoke them, for I will not give any for I will not give you any of the land of the sons of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the sons of Lot as a possession. So the Israelites were obedient. They wiped out their enemies. They didn't go too far. And now they are ready to beat another Amorite king, Og. We'll take that up in our next audio. Hope you stay tuned for that audio. Deuteronomy 3, verses 1 through 29, the entire chapter. And in that chapter, we'll also see Moses being forbidden to enter the promised land. I hope you stay tuned for that, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.